It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
American 77, your departure frequency will be 125.05, runway 30, clear for takeoff.
Takeoff, clear for takeoff, runway 30, American 77.
American 77, Dallas departure radar contact, climb and maintain 5,000.
5,000, American 77.
American 77, Dallas approach, climb and maintain 17,000.
17,000, American 77.
American 77, contact Washington Center
133.27. 33.27,
American 77, thanks for
getting. Add American 77, passing 25.1, 270.
American 77, climb and maintain flight level 290, sir.
290, American 77.
American 77, turn 20 degrees right vector for your climb.
20 right, American 77. Send American 77, you got the request for 350 as a final.
American 77, roger. Maintain flight level 350, I'll show that as your final.
350 for final, American 77, thank you, sir.
American 77, climb and maintain flight level 350.
3350, American 77.
American 77, clear direct to Falmouth.
Direct to Falmouth, American 77, thank you, sir.
American 77, Indy. American 77, American Indy. American 77, American Indy radio check. How do you read? American 77, American radio check. How do you read?
This is Dacos.
This is Henderson, American 77. I don't know what happened to him. I'm trying to read
heading
my...
heading south for Sterling 937.
Looks like he took a turn to the south, and now I'm... I don't know what altitude he's at or what he's doing. Last night he was heading towards Falmouth at 35.
Well, just let me know.
Okay, I'll try to get a hold of him. Thanks.
Sandy Rios with you. That was 17 years ago today. That's the cockpit recording for Flight 77, which left Dulles International Airport outside Washington at 8:20 a.m. and shortly thereafter aimed at the Pentagon, killing all 59 passengers and 123 military and civilians in a Pentagon. In this particular flight, Chick Burlingame was the pilot. Deborah Burlingame was his sister. And this is what Deborah had to say about those moments we just heard.
On the morning of 9/11, it took hijackers 12 minutes to take control of the cockpit of my brother's plane. It took 6 minutes for them to kill my brother and his co-pilot. 6 minutes in a closed cockpit is a very long time. I am not the sister of a victim. I am the sister of a fighter.
That was Deborah Burlingame. Deborah is an attorney, and of course, she has been one of the strongest voices on the truth, getting out the truth about 9/11. But all of us have memories. There were many, many heroes on that day, people whose names we will never know, whose stories we will never know. And just to refresh your memory, there were four planes involved on that day. It was Al-Qaeda. They boarded four different passenger planes. One, they ended up hitting the World Trade Center, the South Tower, the North Tower. They landed in the Pentagon, and they landed. We're not sure where the plane was aimed at that landed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, but that's the one where the passengers heard what had happened to the other planes and decided to try to take over the plane. Remember the Let's Roll from the Wheaton College grads? Those are stories that we do know, but we each have memories of this, and it is takes us back in time. By the way, that's at Levin TV. I just played that courtesy of Levin TV. I wanted you to hear it. You know, I think of my own situation, which I've mentioned, but I will again, because we need to mark these days. You know, when you live in Europe, you see that the Germans, the Russians, the French, they mark their battles. They remember them. It's a way of them remembering where they've come from. Americans forget so easily, and we should not do that. 3,000 people were killed, and we were attacked. That's something we cannot forget. I was in North Korea on September the 11th of 2001. I was one of six talk show hosts from around the country. We got in an unusual way. They obviously did not know what we were doing, and it was a strange thing to be able to get in. We walked across the Tumon River on a bridge by foot. We're taken into a major city in North Korea on the port. We spent an entire day there seeing everything, which is a whole other issue. Spent the night in North Korea and came back across the border, across that footbridge, across the Tumon River, back into Northern Manchuria, went to a Chinese restaurant. Northern Manchuria is actually pretty remote in China. It's not like when you travel now to Beijing and other places. And we went into a Chinese restaurant, and the owner said, "Have you heard what happened?" He says this through an interpreter. And then he tells us, you know, the World Trade Center, two aircraft, American and other airlines have landed. They've crashed into the Pentagon. They've crashed into Pennsylvania. And I remember looking at one of the talk show hosts next to me and saying, "Is this man crazy? Does anyone know? Is this man crazy?" One of our talk show hosts, his name was Andy. He was a talk show host in New York City at the time, had a satellite phone. He called his wife, and she verified everything. Well, needless to say, we could not eat. We wrapped our food up, and we traveled quickly to the apartment of our hosts. All of this had to be on the QT. This is not exactly, if you could imagine, having dinner out in, you know, your hometown on a certain night. It's not like that. It was even our hosts were there disguising their real aim, which was to help North Korean refugees. So we climb up in the dark to the top of their building and sit down. And of course, the television is in, it's not in English. And we see, unedited, unfiltered, the bodies falling from the tower. They translated for us. And that's the way we found out. I remember being on the floor on my knees, rocking back and forth and back and forth, because I honestly thought this was the beginning of World War III. And I thought of my children who were back in Chicago, and would I ever get back? Would I ever get home again? I remember trying to remember the Psalms, certain things that, you know, I had phrases committed to memory, but not those wonderful, beautiful Psalms that you need at a time like that. I remember being stranded in Beijing for nearly 2 weeks, staying up all night to watch the funeral at the National Cathedral, the service, which was just so stunning. I remember seeing a preacher on CNN, and I remember the anchor asking the pastor if he would pray. And I knew then that everything would never be the same in our country. Sadly, we forgot so quickly. We forgot to be grateful. We forgot to thank God. We forgot to honor him in the memorial after that. Remember, they didn't want any scripture, any talk of God. They banned it because they didn't, you know, because we're multicultural. So they said, And so, and then the cross that was found, the big beam that was found at the remains was so controversial. So any emphasis and understanding that there was a God and we needed to cry out to him, some people for the first time discovered that, was squelched as quickly as it was awakened in Americans' hearts and minds. And so it's a good thing for us to go back to that day as we did the top of the show and remember what happened. It could have gone a very different way. And I personally believe that God has granted us some sort of time. I think he heard the prayers of his people, and he has granted us a window of time. And it's interesting what we've done with it, isn't it? Not some very good things. In terms of our moral issues, in terms of, you know, legalizing gay marriage, of thumbing our nose at God, of atheism on the rise, not believing on the rise, just cynicism, wickedness. This is how we've handled this bit of reprieve we've had. But the people of God, I think in some ways were quickened, and I think we have been quickened. That's my personal opinion. I think we got a jolt, and we haven't been the same since. And so, not that we've done enough, no, but the urgency as we think about 9/11 should regenerate and re-energize us again today, because this could happen. Something like this could happen today, could happen tomorrow. We do not have any assurance for the future. We have this moment. And so it's an urgent thing, sharing the gospel, living holy lives, and then, of course, fighting for our country. There's nothing wrong with that. America is our human family. Just like your name may be Smith or Jones, and you take care of the Smiths and the Joneses. You are responsible for your family. Well, America is our family, our extended family, and we are responsible to take care of her. And so that's why we talk about the things that we do at this microphone and on AFR Talk all the time. We understand that. All right, so that's 17 years ago today. I'm going to tell you a few really big stories. All of this talk about the president being incompetent, not understanding world events, and that anonymous writer about how, you know, they were afraid he was going to plunge them into war. He was making such bad international decisions. I'm here to tell you that this president is making incredible decisions. And I want to just mention two of them. I was going to play the clips, but we'll just, John Bolton yesterday spoke at the Federalist Society. And under the leadership of John Bolton as the head of the National Security Committee in the White House, John, of course, is steadfast. That's why Washington hates him. He first served under George W. Bush. He's probably too conservative for George W. Bush. But John announced yesterday the closure of the PLO, Palestinian Liberation Office, in Washington. He did that on, today is the end of Rosh Hashanah, which is a gift to the Jewish people. And I think John said in that speech that he gave yesterday at the Federalist that we will stand by Israel. That's pretty amazing. That's one of the confused mind of President Donald Trump has produced this. It's also produced something that should have happened a long time ago. I wish we could play Ambassador Bolton's words, or his speech, but I want you to hear that he has stated in no uncertain terms that the International Criminal Court is dangerous and dead to America, that we will not subject ourselves to that. The International Court was formed, I think, in 2002, and it was kind of used as a kludgeon to try to go after the United States and to take our soldiers into their courts and accuse them of war crimes in the Middle East. That was the whole idea. And Ambassador Bolton just affirmed, we never did sign on to that treaty, but he's saying we will not subject ourselves, and we will not let these investigators or judges into our country. They have no authority. In fact, he closed by saying we don't recognize any authority higher than the U.S. Constitution. Well, that crazy Donald Trump hired a man like John Bolton and made that decision to kick the PLO out of Washington, to double down on rejecting the International Court, which was going to go after our soldiers. How silly of him. All right, I have to take a break. Be right back. I have a great guest coming up, so don't touch that dial. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net. The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are and reaches them with the love of Christ.
We showed her love, and we accept her right where she's at. If the baby's saved by what we do here, and the mother's life is spared from the devastation of abortion, that definitely helps them in this life. But this is not all that there is. We want our clients to know about Jesus.
I got to see his heartbeat. It kind of just looked like a little butterfly in a bubble. The Lord gave me that baby, and he gave me that baby for a reason.
The Ministry of Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Yet another star of stage and screen has a Donald Trump death wish. The latest is Broadway legend Carol Cook. The 94-year-old actress implied to TMZ she wanted President Trump assassinated. Miss Cook wondered, "Where's John Wilkes Booth when you need him?" Mr. Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln. He was also an actor. Someone off camera asked Miss Cook if Trump should be killed, and she replied, "Why not?" It's not the first time a practicing thespian has fantasized about killing President Trump. Snoop Dogg, Rosie O'Donnell, Robert De Niro, and of course Kathy Griffin's infamous beheading of the president, all for the sake of art. That's what they tell us, artistic license. I'm not so sure about that, but clearly they are savoring the macabre when it comes to the president, and clearly the entertainment industry is a very dark and scary place. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You look at the operation of this White House, and you have to say, let's hope to God we don't have a crisis. People who work for him are worried that he will sign things or give orders that threaten the national security or the financial security of the country or the world.
You know, as I hear Bob Woodward say that, I'm just thinking of the irony of what we just talked about. You know, yesterday, North Korea has signaled, in fact, in their parade, they didn't display any of the weapons that they were displaying before that they were going to use against the United States. They want to talk to the president again. I think of John Bolton. I remember when I first got to know John, I was the chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition, and John was trying desperately to get the Bush administration to do something about North Korea, and they just never did. And so here now, the president of the United States, the crazy man, of course, according to Bob Woodward, the incompetent that can't quite comprehend, is responsible for calming, at least even temporarily, that part of the world down. I could just go on and on, but Bob has just written a new book called Fear. And you may or may not know that Bob Woodward and his buddy Carl Bernstein became icons in the 70s because they brought down President Richard Nixon in a very similar way that they're going after President Trump. at least Bob Woodward in this book. It was a deep state then, but we didn't quite realize it. And they ended up writing this book called All the President's Men, which might ring familiar to some of you. It was made into a movie, and Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein were made icons, gods, godlike characters for the journalism, the world of journalism. And in some ways, that aura still hangs over them. But I know that the aura, the crown has some rust on it and had some rust on it then, but now we have more evidence. Diana West is an investigative writer. She's a syndicated columnist, also a graduate of Yale. She grew up in Hollywood. She's got a fascinating story. We've talked with Diana before. She's one of my favorites. She's an expert on Soviet influence in the United States. Her last book was American Betrayal, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning, Sandy.
You know what? Is there anything I left out over the aura of Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein? Did you, as a writer, how did you feel toward them when you were younger and maybe of a different mindset?
Well, as a conservative young writer, I was always somewhat leery, I have to say, of the whole Watergate rush to destroy the president. But on the other hand, as a journalist operating in Washington, I was always conscious of this tremendous aura, as you say, the reputation of particularly Bob Woodward, which continued, and he would periodically bring out books as journalism became too little for him, I guess. And these books have always been occasions that probably drove every administration to distraction. They are gotcha books. But I have to say that until we come into this Trump period, my sense was that not everybody always believed these books. They always are heavily anonymously sourced. And in some of the more outrageous claims, have attracted a lot of controversy, a lot of people saying, no, didn't happen. So I would say that the Watergate aura, the Watergate image, over the years has sort of become kind of a bit of a question, again, until we come into this Trump period, and now we see resurgent Woodward, and we see kind of the disappearance of the controversies. I was very interested when I just kind of went back to try to jog my own memory. I found a Politico story of all places, of all outlets, the liberal Politico, kind of doing a rundown of some of Bob Woodward's less than greatest hits going back over the years. And this was in 2012. And the one that I was going back to get the details on was the very famous deathbed interview of Ronald Reagan's CIA director, William Casey. So many people disputed that this was possible, with people talking about Casey having been in a coma or having been under 24-hour guard as the former CIA director. I mean, this was not just somebody you could access easily. And so that particular interview, I think, stood as a kind of a tarnish,
a red flag.
the rust on the crown. I'm sorry.
Diana, let me just jump in because people may not know the story. Because Woodward claims that he got into the hospital room, that William Casey woke up from the coma and told him that that Reagan, I think it was Reagan, wasn't it, that he was supposed to be spilling the beans on?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah, so
The story itself of what he got was almost less important than the unbelievability of the deathbed interview. But what I discovered in this political story was the reason they wrote this story in 2012, which I'd completely missed, was an amazing revelation from Ben Bradlee, the legendary editor of the Washington Post, who had been the editor at the time of Watergate and was the sponsor of Woodward and Bernstein and the entire push against Richard Nixon in the 1970s. Bradlee apparently was interviewed or was sort of working with a writer while he was preparing his own memoirs in 2010. And in the course of kind of somebody, another writer, going through Bradlee's boxes of papers for preparation of his own biography, a reporter named Jeff Himmelman, who seems to have been something of a Washington Post favored son because he had worked with Bob Woodward and he had access to Ben Bradlee's papers, Well, he comes across an interview by Ben Bradley in which he talks about, first of all, Watergate not being really such a big deal after all, which is kind of an amazing admission that it would have been just a blip had Richard Nixon not been driven to resign. In other words, that the resignation itself was what made it historic, which I thought was pretty fascinating. But more so, in discussing Deep Throat, which was the name that Woodward and Bernstein gave to their super, super secret source that people will remember, and they were supposed to be this elaborate system by which they would talk to him in a garage, and then there was a signal that Woodward would allegedly leave on his balcony in a flower pot, all this crazy stuff. Anyway, Bradley says to this, in this interview, he says, he's talking about Deep Throat, and he says, quote, "There's a residual fear in my soul that that isn't quite straight." When you think about this, this is astonishing because we're looking 30-some years later, residual fear in Bradley's soul as he's approaching the end of his life. This is something quite big. And this is something that this reporter, Jeff Himmelman, to his credit, seizes on. Bradley did not use it in his own memoir, and Himmelman wants to use it in the biography, which he does. He does use this. But what goes on, and I wrote about this at my website, and I really recommend people read this because it's so fascinating, is Himmelman chronicles, I just reposted this, Himmelman chronicles Bob Woodward's meltdown at the thought that Ben Bradley would permit this to go into the public, that Himmelman would want to write about it, and what it might do to the Woodward Bernstein Washington Post legend. And I think it's very instructive because I don't believe that we're looking at details, little details, embellishments, as these men ultimately decide, sort of as a rationale. I don't think that fear in my soul comes out of a little bit of exaggeration. I think that we are looking at something bigger, and Bob Woodward's crazy reaction, it goes on for days. It's really quite an extraordinary story that Himmelman relates. I think that it reflects the fact of being caught out in something very deceptive. So this has to be folded into the Woodward legend that we are now seeing kind of tripped out or brought out as something sterling. And I've always had the sense, again, growing up here and kind of cutting my teeth over these many decades of experience, that, you know, there always was a bit of question about were his anonymous sources good? And I always felt if somebody quibbled with it, if somebody called him out, you had to take another look. And that was kind of how I judged Woodward's reporting. If he said something outrageous and a public person let it ride, I would accept it. But if people take issue, and strong issue, and start pushing back, I think you have to take another look, because anonymous sourcing is something you have to trust a reporter on, and you can't trust Bob Woodward. You can't trust most reporters. I mean, who can you really trust when it's an anonymous source? So this becomes a very dangerous way of doing political business in Washington, when people can simply advance their agenda using the veil of anonymity. And we've seen that this week. I'm sure you've been talking about the New York Times anonymous op-ed. We see Bob Woodward now going forward as a soldier against Donald Trump based on anonymous sources again. And I think you have to look at the totality of his record and understand how many times he's been questioned from all quarters, not just Washington, in Hollywood, different books he's written. There's the list that Politico lists six very big stories that were very strongly questioned. I'm sure there are more. This is kind of his stock and trade, the anonymous story. I would say some are true, and I would say some are false. And,
you know, Diana, just to kind of put perspective on this, I sort of hinted at this, but I want to drive it home again, because there are a lot of people who don't remember Watergate, and they don't remember what you and I take for granted. And I remember that Ben Bradley, I'm going to repeat this, was the editor of the Washington Post. The Washington Post made its bones on this story, the Watergate story. And Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward were the young reporters, with Ben Bradley overseeing their investigation. They claimed they had this Deep Throat person who was, they never did name it. We find out now, Diana, I think most people don't think there was really was a Deep Throat. What was the final on that?
Well, I'm wondering about the final on that. There was finally a revelation that Deep Throat was a senior FBI, a disgruntled senior FBI official named Mark Felt, who was feeding them information out of pique and upset that he had not been promoted. This is the story as I have synthesized it. Frankly, I'm wondering now when I look back and see Ben Bradley in 2010 and 2012 when these conversations with Woodward and this writer were taking place, I'm also wondering about that now. Maybe it's too pat to assume that there really was one man who was Deep Throat named Mark Felt now dead. Maybe we can't trust that either. This is where you come down to with Ben Bradley is saying that, and this is another great quotation from this journalist's kind of excavation of the papers. This is a quote from Ben Bradley about Watergate. "I mean, the crime itself was really not a great deal. Had it not been for the Nixon resignation, it would be really a blip in history." Well, oh my gosh. I mean, this was, as you say, this was a watershed event in American history and our politics, watching a president forced to resign over what now the editor of the Washington Post, that was the engine of the forces that brought him down, is saying, well, what he did really wasn't that bad. It was the resignation that made history. Well, what made the resignation? Well, it was the cacophony of reporting and the hatred of Richard Nixon on the left, which does, of course, parallel what we're seeing in a small way. No, I think there were very, kind of relatively similar situations in terms of the left hating Nixon and the left hating Trump.
Most
Trump
definitely.
Maybe more surrounded, but the same kind of hysteria.
Yeah.
And you have the man in charge of it saying, well, what he did really was a blip, but it was the resignation that made history. So,
yeah, Diana, I felt the same as you. I mentioned this on the air yesterday because there was something that didn't pass the smell test when I was young and this was developing. And even we didn't have any other alternative press. But here's
right.
the thing. It is the holy grail of the left. They view that as a watershed event that was their power, and they would like to repeat it. And if Woodward is proven to be a liar and unreliable, a lot of things come crumbling down. And if it's true that Watergate wasn't that big of a deal, and that they're really that Woodward's reporting might not have been true, that's very scary to them. I don't expect that we'll see anybody besides Diana West writing about this. I think the Daily Caller actually wrote an article echoing your piece, Diana, that came out today. And by the way,
let me
just say,
yeah.
Diana's piece is The Fear in Bob Woodward's Soul, and we're going to put this on our Facebook page because, honestly, it's very intriguing how this all went down. One last thing, Diana, before we run out of time here. Bob Woodward, is saying he didn't think the anonymous writer out of the Washington, out of the White House, should have been printed in the New York Times. I thought that was pretty ironic.
Yeah. Well, it just shows you these people will say anything. The deceptive nature of these people and the lack of principles, I think, is something that we all can identify very easily now and need to, and not be snowed by the lights, the image, the fame, because that is how we are cowed, and it really is dangerous. I mean, this is such a dangerous time, and this is exactly the Woodward story is so important to get straight as far as we can. We don't have the answers, but we know there's a lot to question and a lot of duplicity on view.
I remember when I was in the Soviet Union, which is your bailiwick, in 1990, and that was just beginning to open up, and I heard person after person, Diana, not just heard but saw their faces, the shock that they had been lied to for 60 years. They were just beginning to get information, and honestly, I would describe it as a nation in shock. I think we have sort of the same thing here.
Absolutely.
All right, Diana West, one of my favorites. The Fear in Bob Woodward's Soul will be on our Facebook page, and you can read the entire thing. Diana, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Recently, tech titans have sought to minimize the access people have to conservative content. But what we've seen so far is just the beginning. At an off-the-record event where the usual regressive media suspects were gathered, Mark Zuckerberg announced Facebook will dial up the intensity of its efforts to minimize access to, quote, controversial political content, end quote. Any wonder as to what type of content Zuckerberg deems to be controversial?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The charade of the Brett Kavanaugh hearings are over, along with the showboating about Spartacus and the sacredness of precedent. The most significant part of the week came when Kavanaugh addressed the overturning of the 1896 Plessy v. Ferguson precedent by the Supreme Court in Brown v. Board of Education in 1954. Plessy v. Ferguson said separate but equal is constitutional, but Brown said it's not. That was the end of segregated lunch counters, water fountains, and schools. Here's the kicker. If Supreme Court precedent was as inviolate as regressives say Roe v. Wade is, Plessy would still be in force. But Plessy, even though it was precedent for 58 years, was overturned. Roe has only been precedent for 45 years. If Plessy could be rightly overturned, so can Roe.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Good news. You are not stuck with your healthcare plan. Really, you have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others, too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 17 years ago, America suffered a horrific attack that plunged our nation into a war that today has no end in sight. In part, that's due to the fact that we haven't been clear about who we are fighting and why. Candidate Donald Trump recognized this reality and promised to respond, starting by replacing euphemisms like terrorism and violent extremism with a policy that established the actual source of the threat, radical Islam, and its jihad-commanding Sharia. Yet, America's strategy remains unmoored from that direction, and we are no closer to victory than on 9/12. To the contrary, Sharia supremacists are on the march worldwide, including here at home, albeit more stealthily for the time being. President Trump famously called on Muslim nations to drive them out. For 17 years, we've tried settling for less and must do so no longer. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're fielding great candidates everywhere. You see the energy out there. Democratic turnout in the primaries in 2018 has been up 84% from 2014.
The president has a 90% approval rating among Republicans. And remember, in the midterms, it's the party that's turning out their base. We have to turn out our base first.
In 2 months, we have a chance to restore some sanity in our politics. If we don't step up, things can get worse.
President Obama made a speech. Now, if that doesn't get you out to vote for the midterms, nothing will.
All right. That was, first of all, it was Tom Perez, who's the head of the Democratic Party, then Ronna McDaniel, the head of the RNC, and then President Obama, and then President Trump. Let me just say that polls are showing that the Democrats are really doing very well in the polls. It's looking troubling for Republicans. In fact, Mike Emanuel had a report last night about how even the Senate, the numbers are slipping in some of the races. The Senate should be a sure thing, and yet the polls are tightening. For some, there should be concern. There is a certain confidence that seems to be wafting over, especially the hard left. They've appointed lots of hard left candidates who have beaten out some traditional Democrats and some Republicans in the primaries. And so let's just say that the far left is really feeling their oats. Maxine Waters really probably is the 24-hour news cycle example of that. She was in California she was getting an award from Stonewall Young Democrats in Los Angeles. She made an incredible speech. I wish, honestly, I could play the whole thing, but it's long. So I just want you to hear in part what Maxine Waters had to say. Here it is.
You've all been paying attention to the confirmation hearings over in the Senate. And yesterday, I guess it was, when Dianne Feinstein, someone I've known for years, a friend, apologized to Kavanaugh for protesting. And I sat up in my seat at my desk because I think we've got to get this thing straight. We don't ask permission to protest.
That's right.
We protest.
Yeah.
We protest when we understand that we have to make America hear us and see us, and understand that we all have something to say. And so I probably will have a conversation with Diane, and we'll talk about it. And I'll say to Diane, remember, there are those who said that we lacked civility when I got up and talked about the president's cabinet. And I said, if you see him anywhere, if you see him at a restaurant, if you see him in a department store, even at a gasoline station, just tell him you're not welcome here or anywhere. And so it frightened a lot of people. And of course, the line president said that I had threatened all of his constituents. I did not threaten his constituents, his supporters. I do that all the time, but I didn't do it that time. But what bothered me so much was they tried to frame that as violence. That's not violence. As a matter of fact, I said the poster child for violence is the President of the United States.
Amen.
He's the one who threatens. Don't forget at his rallies what he said. Go ahead and beat him up. I'll take him out on a stretcher. He even said, you know, if they jail you, I will bail you out, on and on and on. I do not advocate violence. I do not believe you should hit, kick, shoot. I don't think you should do that. I don't do that. And I won't allow anybody to define our protesting in that way. Right. And we have to tell people the difference between violence and incivility and protest.
Yeah, and she also said, when I compare what you're doing with what we have in Washington in the highest office in the land, I wake up in the middle of the night and all I can think about is I'm going to get him. She also was talking about impeachment. She said they have asked her leaders in the Democratic Party, Maxine, don't talk about impeachment. And she say, I say impeachment, 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 impeachment. That was her response to that. And so I think there was even more incriminating things. Like I said, I wish we could play that whole thing. You know what? Let's put that whole thing on our Facebook page, Adam. Because I think people need to hear what Maxine Waters had to say. It's actually, you know, I don't think people have said that she's not very smart. I think she's very smart, actually. She's smart like Nancy Pelosi. They're wicked smart is what they are. And so I think we need to know who I think the enemies of this country are. And again, not because they're Democrat. I don't think this is a party issue. Heaven knows, I think the Republicans have their own set of problems. They are corrupt for different ways. And I'm not saying all of them, and I'm not saying all Democrats. I would say a huge amount of the Democrats and enough of the Republicans that Houston, we have a problem. And that's why this 2018 election is so important. It's just so important. I can't even begin, at least in this moment, to tell you what will happen. Let me just say that everything that you think has been an improvement, not only in the economy, and that's something that there's nothing wrong with wanting a stable economy and future for your kids and jobs and, security. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are other things that will reverse. I mean, the wheels will come off the bus and everything will go backwards. For them, they think it's going forwards. But trust me, it's backwards in terms of morality and order and the Constitution, the rule of law. It will be a nightmare. By the way, Democrats in Missouri are planning on, in fact, they've sent out instructions to their members to snatch up tickets to an upcoming Trump rally. The idea is to take the tickets. I'll read their words. President Trump is coming to town, so it is time to gear up. Here's what is going to happen. Right now, we go to Trump rally website, get your two free tickets. This will empty out the stadium. So the idea is they're going to take the tickets and so that no one will be there. At least that's what they're hoping. And then they also are they're having a party with these baby Trump balloons, which were the balloons that were shown in London. So that's what's happening in Missouri. Of course, they can do that. That's not at least violent protest. It's just that's what they're doing. There was an interesting report by Mike Emanuel last night about the Senate, which I wanted to share with you. This is on Fox News. Let's listen. Clip 7.
This was supposed to be an easier year for Republicans running for the Senate, with a number of Democrats in conservative states on the ballot. But at this stage, things are too close for the GOP's comfort. A prime example is Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
We got a fight on our hands. The extreme left. They're angry. They're energized. And they are filled with hatred.
His opponent, Congressman Beto O'Rourke, is drawing big dollars and big crowds.
It's about the future of this country, the big things that we want to do, going from the least insured state in the country to the one that leads on universal health care.
Real Clear Politics lists 8 other races as toss-ups: Arizona, Indiana, Montana, Missouri, Florida, Tennessee, Nevada, and North Dakota. A 2-seat swing would put the Democrats in the majority. The tight polls in many of these Senate races have Democrats feeling upbeat, even as some in red states carefully navigate the Trump factor.
Hoosiers want a senator who works for them. Now, I'll work with any president, but I don't work for any president. I work for the people of Indiana.
Democratic strategists note their incumbent candidates must deliver.
North Dakota, Missouri, and Florida. 3 very close, very tough fights in very tough states for 3 members of the Senate, 2 of whom at least had won during Obama's last election, where they had the benefit of him at the top of the ticket.
Both sides are closely watching Texas and Tennessee. Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has said his party's path to the majority runs through those 2 states. Sources close to Majority Leader Mitch McConnell acknowledge a tough environment, but say they cannot see losing the Senate majority.
All right, Mike Emanuel, Fox News. So we'll see about that. I think anything can happen, personally. And that's why I think that every single one of us needs to be voting. Not without knowledge. I would never. People used to say this. Just vote. Just go and vote. No, don't do that. Unless you are prepared and you know who's running and you don't have to do it. It doesn't take that long. It doesn't take that long to go on a voter guide and enter your zip code. And AFAaction.net has our voter guide each state. There are trusted voter guides you can find. There are family policy foundations in almost every state. I recommend those. Please do your best. Now, while the left is busy, registering, well, they're not registering voters now, but they did. But they're certainly getting out the vote. What are conservatives doing? I just wonder, have you talked to your friends, your neighbors? Have you encouraged them? Do you even dare talk about it? We have been so shamed into silence that I don't think there's a lot of conversation. I read an article by, I think it's the Sundance that I don't know who that is, but he does a lot of writing and a lot of my friends trust his judgment. He was describing what he calls the white hot anger that is just sitting there simmering among people who love this country and love the Constitution and love what the president is doing, this simmering anger at what they're seeing in the Kavanaugh hearings, from a person like Maxine Waters from the harassment of Kristen Nielsen and the restaurant, just the out-of-control, lawless disregard for just basic human decency, and the killing of our policemen and the violence that Antifa certainly exacts, Black Lives Matter, just a simmering, white-hot anger. I don't know, you know, if that's an, I think it is true of some people, whether that will stimulate and encourage people to get out to vote. The proof will be in the pudding. But it's just, less than 2 months away. And if you are in a state where, you know, you don't have a chance of electing someone who's good, then I would suggest you look at other states. Look at other states where you can make a difference. Cast your lot, I guess. Senate Conservatives Fund is supporting some great senators, for instance. And you might want to check their website and see what they think about the various races. You can give money. You can volunteer. Even if you're out of state, you can make phone calls to constituents. Do get out the vote phone calls. There are always people needed. This is all hands on deck. It's all hands on deck. Just a practical thing. Dr. Jeffress will be our guest in a couple of weeks to talk about his new book. But I want to tell you that it's called Choosing the Extraordinary Life. It's the 7 Secrets of Success and Significance. And he has just a number of very interesting practical things, as he always does, biblically based, how to keep waiting time from being wasted time, unleashing the power of prayer in your life, and how to handle bad days. That would be a good book to have, wouldn't it? 3 convictions that will transform your life and other things, too. If you would like to order this book, Choosing the Extraordinary Life, you can do it by going to the AFA store, afastore.net, afastore.net, or you can call 1-877-927-4917, 877-927-4917. One other thing that we will be doing our share-a-thon in October, that's when we have a lot of fun with you, and one of the big fun things to me is hearing from you, hearing from your listener stories. And as you know, we set up a line to you call and you just record what it is you want to say about what AFR Talk has meant to you, about what this show has meant to you, or any of the other shows. And then we use those in the share-a-thon. It makes it very personal, and it's always very encouraging to us to hear back from you. And if you'd like to do that, write this number down. It's 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893 to record your listener story. Well, there are a lot of things happening on the national security front, which I didn't really get to. I'll just mention them briefly. FBI officials, according to Mark Meadows, who wrote a letter to the Justice Department, they have discovered, or at least made public now, some more email between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And it looks as though they actually had what they called a media leak strategy, which entangles several people who said that they did not, FBI people, that they did not leak to media. But these email correspond with stories that were leaked to the press. And now we see Peter Strzok congratulating Lisa Page on certain stories that came out. It's really very, very incriminating. So that's a new thing. Now we're finding out that meeting in the Trump Tower with Don Jr. seems to have been a setup by Hillary Clinton and the Barack Obama administration, with people connected to them, Russians connected to them. And it's like a setup to make it seem as though President Trump was colluding with the Russians. Just one more story. All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.